You are listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program, and my name is Beth Weisong, and I will be your host for the next 2 hours here on KDNK this afternoon. On today's program, we have a very special treat. It is the second week of students from a Colorado Rocky Mountain School's Creative Nonfiction and Radio English class taught by Eric Skeef. And the students have come over to share their podcast that they have been working on the past semester. And so without further ado, I'd like to introduce the students. Go ahead and introduce yourselves and tell us what podcast you'll be sharing today.
My name is Riley Padgett.
And my name is Cole Peach.
And our podcast is on the effects of wildfire in the West.
My name is Danny Nam.
And my name is Lauren Kenyon. And our podcast is an investigation of meaning in visual arts.
My name is Belle Raleigh.
And my name is Giselle Rusnak, and our topic is the psychology of serial criminals.
My name is Flannery Martin.
And I'm Morgana Sendejas, and our topic is about what makes a good high school experience.
All right, great. Sounds like we have a lot to look forward to in the next 2 hours. So can one of you please tell us how the creative nonfiction and radio English class is structured, just to tell our listeners again, if they didn't tune in last week, just tell us a little bit about your class over at Colorado Rocky Mountain School.
Yeah, so basically since day one, we started thinking big picture about what kind of story or what kind of subject we wanted to do our podcast on. And we partnered up with other people in the class and started to think of some questions that we wanted to investigate or answer throughout the couple months that the first semester of our school that it took to make this podcast. And so we started out by reading a lot of nonfiction articles and listening to podcasts during class time and learning about some different techniques that we could use to help make our podcast. And we started pretty early to gather audio. We went on the streets of Carbondale to kind of interview people we saw and ask them about what their thoughts were on our various subjects. And that audio became part of our podcast. And we also started to do some research on our topics and interview some experts and include that audio in our podcasts. And then the last 2 months or so of it was writing our narration and kind of bringing together the story that we wanted to tell over our podcast, write it all down, and then record it and edit the audio and compile it all together. And the final step was to add music and ambient noise to kind of flesh everything out.
Great. It sounds like that's been a really great project this whole semester. Is there anybody else wants to add anything to that? No, they're all shaking their heads. I know you can't see, but they're kind of shy. They're not stepping up to the microphone quite yet, but we're going to play all of their podcasts and hear from each one of them about the learning experience surrounding creating their stories and their podcasts. So without further ado, we have the first story from Riley and Cole on the effects of wildfires in the West. So please enjoy, and thanks for tuning in to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program on KDNK.
Wildfire is becoming one of the most threatening and detrimental forces across the Western United States. It is always something in the back of your mind when you live in a dry climate as we do, but this year especially, wildfire has become a harsh reality in the West. As the climate warms, and as conditions get drier every year, wildfire will inevitably be much more of a problem in the near future. In fact, just this past summer, we experienced our own wildfire nightmare in our hometowns of Basalt and Carbondale, Colorado. My name is Cole Peach.
And I'm Riley Padgett. We are seniors at the Colorado Rocky Mountain School in Carbondale, Colorado. This is our podcast on the effects of wildfire. On July 3rd of this year, Richard Miller, age 23, and Allison Marcus, age 22, were allegedly shooting tracer rounds at the gun range in Basalt, Colorado when they accidentally triggered a wildfire. The gun range is located above downtown Basalt, tucked up in the hills near a popular fishing lake called Lake Racine. Tracer rounds are bullets that burn pyrotechnic powder as they fly so that the trajectory of the bullet is visible. They were fully prohibited at the shooting range. The fire grew slowly that night, but on the following day, it advanced towards the town of Basalt, prompting evacuations. The real scare, though, came the night of July 4th, when the wind suddenly changed directions from south to northwest and the fire charged towards the neighborhoods of Willits and Elgebel.
Riley and I were together on the night of July 4th, when the wildfire suddenly started moving towards the valley floor. We were both working at a barbecue at River Valley Ranch, a neighborhood pool about 15 miles down valley of the fire. We could see a massive column of smoke in the sky the whole afternoon. The column began to spread out over the whole sky and filled the valley with a haze. This made us uneasy. The real panic set in when we heard the news that the fire began to provoke evacuations in Willits and Elgebel. By then, it was night, and the skyline, even from miles away, was lit up by a dull red glow.
I vividly remember the call from my parents. "Riley, we're evacuating. We don't know if our house is going to be okay." I didn't know what was going on. All I could see was the orange blaze across the sky. I was hoping that everything was all right. We began to look through Twitter and other sources of social media, just trying to find information. I called my parents back, I called my brother, I called anyone that I could just to find out what was going on. Apparently, the fire had started sweeping rapidly towards the valley floor and towards Highway 82. I didn't know what was in store. I was just praying for my own house. I wasn't thinking of anyone else. When I got news that it had reached Elgebel, that it had reached very close to the homes there, I didn't know what to think. My sister called me. She was in a panic, yet she lives in Denver. She didn't know if her childhood home had gone up in flames and been destroyed. I didn't know what to say to her either. All I could say was, "I don't know. I don't know what's going on." The view from Carbondale wasn't that menacing, but the idea of what was happening up valley was just terrifying. We remained in Carbondale, in the unknown. I had a pit in my stomach. We had no idea where the fire was or where it was moving. My parents arrived in Carbondale with hastily packed bags in their car. I was upset because I didn't have the chance to take any of the things I cared about, but that was not the most important thing on my mind.
Riley's family moved their stuff to my house to stay the night. Riley, his dad, and I went up to the Crown, a hill covered in mountain biking trails that overlooks Basalt, to see the wildfire. The view was like nothing I've ever seen before. It looked like when you are in an airplane and you look down at a city and can see all the twinkling lights, except these lights were spread out across the mountainside in the form of flames. Everyone who was in the valley that night has their own story about the fire. One of the stories with the greatest insight came from Brian Davies, captain at the Basalt Rural Fire Protection District. He ran Division Alpha, which was half of the response team for the fire. We asked him to tell us about his experience.
Please excuse the poor audio. Our interview with Brian was conducted over the phone.
Brian Davies, captain with the Basalt and Rural Fire Protection District, and we received a call about 6 o'clock in the evening on July 3rd and for a fire at the gun range. And by the time I was coming down valley and about the time that the call came in, and by the time I passed the gun range, it was growing very rapidly. We were expecting it to go up valley towards the wilds, downtown Basalt, but instead it went uphill and turned west following the power line that go up Basalt Mountain and the roads in that area. So we were a little bit fortunate in that it didn't head towards the subdivisions or the populated areas, but definitely was going towards more fuel than we were ready for.
Brian then explained the events of July 4th, the following day, after the firefighters had stopped working for the night.
We were all headed back to the station. We got to the station and were debriefing the incident command teams when somebody came in and said, "You guys have to look at this." And when we went out, you saw flame lengths again of 100, 200 feet. But this time it was coming over the ridge above Basalt, above El Jebel. And as it was coming down that, it took us a little bit of time. I mean, maybe, you know, half a minute or so to really process what we were seeing. And it was coming straight down onto the trailer park, which hadn't yet been evacuated. So we needed to do evacuations of that, and as you know, the embers were marching ahead and threatening those structures. And you know, the fire behavior at that time was just so fast and so heavy that it was all we could do to really get in position, complicated by the fact that everybody was trying to get out of the trailer park. So that was, you know, dangerous situation all around. We also had another task force go up the hill to Missouri Heights, up there where there was flames starting to lick up that direction. And so, you know, that night really was about protecting the structures, trying to slow down the flame front. We were able to get into the trailer park in time to do some good. We did that back burn on Lava Drive. On Prentice Drive, where I was at, we were fortunate. It you know, hit a couple areas of lighter fuel, and so we had enough water to put out that without having to do back burn. On Clark Drive, it burned right down into the yards, but it was very low, 5-inch high grass, so it was easily handled. And we got that all done, and you know, we were sitting on it about 12:30 when another wind event kicked up. And that second wind event was powerful enough that limbs were breaking off the trees, you know, throwing furniture around. And really that second wind event, you know, pushed it down into the couple houses that burned. And that's, you know, we had to stay diligent for that time until about 4 o'clock in the morning when it actually did start to lighten up.
It took nearly 2 months before the fire went out completely, having burned 12,588 acres up and around Basalt Mountain, but the night of the 4th was easily the most threatening.
After the wildfire died down, we were left with some questions. Why was the risk of wildfire so bad in the first place? How could the fire have been prevented? What could we learn about wildfires from the Lake Christine fire? And finally, how much of an issue are wildfires to humans?
During the fire, everything was out of our control. Now, we want to take a step back and look at the big picture of the situation. First, though, we wanted to hear other people's impressions and experiences from the fire. We took to the streets of Carbondale and asked some questions to the people we saw.
The first person we asked was a kind man named Chuck, who was sitting outside of a coffee shop.
Hi, I'm Chuck Basanti, and my experience with the wildfire was like everybody else. It was sort of devastating to see the destruction, and it came really close to our home. We live right near Whole Foods in Willits, and we sat on our patio and watched it come almost to the highway. Fortunately, it didn't cross, and it was very traumatic at the time. People were rolling their luggage through the hallways to leave. We stuck it out, and it was okay. It didn't cross the highway.
We then asked two other locals, Crystal and Kim, about their experiences with the fire.
Okay, my name is Crystal Colantino, and I'm a local. I work at Harmony Scott Jewelry. I remember being at home. I live in Missouri Heights, and we were at home. It was probably like 10 p.m. The night of the fire, and we kind of felt like a 95-degree heat wave sort of come through, and then watched the fire come over our ridge, and decided to evacuate ourselves because we don't have service up there. So it was kind of interesting to see what you grab on a quick go. Stuff your car full of stuff and then leave. So it was kind of interesting. I'd never been that close to a fire before. It was pretty intense, just very alive entity that you got to feel quite up close.
My name is Kim Holland, and my house was a half a mile away from Lake Christine. And although I was on vacation, my house sitters were evacuated for a week. And I'm in a flash flood zone now, and above my house, there's nothing but dead brush. So, yes, I missed all the fireworks, but I saw a lot of it online and videos, and it was very scary.
And how do you think that affected other people that were here?
Oh, drastically, drastically. You know, three houses burned down. And, you know, I kept getting texts from friends and neighbors very upset about the whole situation.
After we heard about other people's experiences, the first thing we wanted to investigate was the cause of the Lake Christine wildfire. What was to blame? Bad environmental conditions or the foolish action of some individuals? We were very intrigued about the role that dry conditions play in the severity of wildfire. We were already aware that there is a connection between environmental conditions and wildfires, but we wanted to explore this further and figure out why that was the case. So we spoke to Kevin Warner, an acting district ranger for the White River National Forest.
We met Kevin at the Soper's Ranger District Station in downtown Carbondale. The ranger offices are situated in a log building with yellow trim, the interior filled with maps, souvenirs for visitors, and posters of wildlife and information about the forest. We met Kevin, an approachable man who sported a Patagonia fleece and a goatee, in a conference room in the building.
Greatest cause of wildfires in Colorado is still lightning and other natural causes, but as you really work into those areas where you have higher density populations and more visitation and those kind of things, you get more fires caused by humans. So, for example, the White River National Forest had 34 fires up until recently over the span of 2018, and 8 of those were human caused. And so the majority were still lightning, but they're definitely ramping up with the human caused ones as well.
We were surprised to learn that the majority of recent wildfires in Colorado were not caused by humans, but by environmental events like lightning. We continued our conversation with Kevin and asked him some more questions.
What are the biggest impacts of wildfires, both on the surrounding environment, the natural world, and then on humans and kind of society?
Sure. So I would say that the biggest impacts of wildfires on like human society really come from some of the immediate impacts during the fire. And so, you know, people are out of their homes. People are not able to access some of the areas they normally would be able to access. There's a lot of smoke in the air. There's extra, you know, people on the roads having to, you know, firefighters and such doing all that. So I think that in a lot of instances, that's what we look at as far as the, like, the greatest, more instantaneous impact. When you look at, like, the impacts to the to the environment, many of them then translate to those longer term impacts to humans. And so some of the things that happen after a fire, which are pretty natural and normal responses to a fire, are will potentially get some flooding because you have a lot of vegetation that's gone, where now you have this rainfall coming in and there's nothing to hold it back, nothing to suck it up either. So you get that. You'll get potential landslides and other things of that nature as well. And those things have a possibility of really impacting human water, like water supplies for municipalities and other things. So when you look at the human impacts, the later term human impacts come from more of the environmental effects. There's two different ways to prevent wildfires in my mind anyway. One is those human-caused fires. So almost every human-caused fire, there was a way to prevent those in some way, shape, or form. And so one of the things we really recommend to folks is really make sure that their campfires are out when they leave. And that usually includes a lot of water and some stirring and everything like that to make sure the campfires are all the way out. They're cold when you're leaving. Another thing is just making sure that even when you are in camp, that you're actually paying attention to that campfire. Some people will leave and walk away, and the wind pops up and blows embers out, and off goes a wildfire. So that can happen as well. So those are some of the easy ways to deal with it, preventing human-caused wildfires. Now, the other thing that we really recommend to folks that helps us to better manage those naturally occurring wildfires is to create defensible space around their homes through thinning and other things, keeping the grass back and those kind of things. So that allows us to actually more naturally manage a naturally occurring wildfire, because then we can actually say, okay, well, we've got some space to work with here. And so we can allow those fires to do what they normally would do. And when we do that, then the next time you get a fire in a similar area, it's easier to control those fires as well.
This information on the impacts of wildfires is important in answering our question about the overall severity of fire events. Our experiences definitely reflect the instantaneous effects of wildfires that Kevin talked about, but we were surprised to hear about the less obvious side effects, like the increased risk of flooding. It was also surprising to hear that the majority of wildfires this year have been caused by natural events such as lightning. This went against our previous conception. We learned that when considering wildfires, it is important to observe them as they are and consider all the factors that contribute to these natural events.
The Lake Christine fire was a terrifying experience. As bad as it was, there have been wildfire incidents this year that have been even worse. Take the Camp Fire in Northern California, for instance, which burned over 153,000 acres, destroying over 18,000 buildings and taking the lives of close to 100 people. It was the deadliest and most destructive wildfire in California history. Even though the consequences of the Camp Fire were far more significant than those of the Lake Christine fire, the causes of both fires are one and the same. We know that things could have turned out much worse in Basalt and Carbondale, and we are grateful that they didn't.
Fire was eye-opening for us in terms of what it taught us about wildfire as a nationwide problem. Before the fire, we knew of it as a general risk, but it never seemed like something to worry about. That changed this summer. Wildfire should be something that everyone is aware of because of how high the consequences of fires are and the increased risk of them every year. It is critical that everyone becomes familiar with fire prevention techniques like those Kevin Warner explained to decrease the risk of wildfires.
We hope that you have not had to experience a wildfire or that you will ever experience one. For us, and for many whom we know of, it was an experience that made us reconsider the threat that fires pose to us all.
It is imperative that we all recognize the factors that increase the risk of wildfire, like human-induced climate change and careless behavior involved with inflammatory materials, in order to prevent incidents like the Lake Christine fire. Once again, this is Riley Padgett and Cole Peach from the Colorado Rocky Mountain School in Carbondale, Colorado.
And we want to thank you for listening.
This is KDNK Community Radio. You are listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. And if you just tuned in, we are joined by students from Colorado Rocky Mountain School in Eric Skeef's Creative Nonfiction and Radio English class. And we just heard from Riley and Cole about wildfires. Thanks, guys, so much for a wonderful presentation. Move on up to that microphone. Yeah. Well, so tell us, why did you choose this topic? Clearly, it was a big event in our community, but what was the main reason you chose that topic?
Right, like you said, this was a huge incident that happened in our valley. It's not something that happens every day, and so that sort of personal side of it, how it affected us, sort of initially pushed us towards this topic. But both Cole and I are both really passionate about environmental science, and we took a AP environmental science course last year and learned a lot about climate change and how that's affecting the planet. And we sort of, after this fire happened to us in our valley, we kind of looked at it and tried to sort of come at it from a standpoint of the environmental aspect of why the fire was caused. And so initially our project was going to be on drought and the effects that drought has to play on fire events. And we sort of started to take that approach, but it kind of developed into something else. And yeah, and then we came to this point where we have our podcast on just sort of the overall effects of wildfire, not necessarily as specific as climate change. It's just itself.
It evolved to something different than you had imagined.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very neat. Cole, anything to add?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, what was the most challenging part about creating this story?
I'd say there were kind of two parts that were both pretty challenging. And one was kind of the, creative part, like writing the narration and kind of coming up with your story and thinking about what the best way to tell your story is, and trying to make it engaging and available for even a nationwide audience. Everyone in this valley kind of already knows about what happened during the Lake Christine fire, but we also wanted to kind of provide an insight into that experience for listeners who aren't familiar or didn't experience the fire. And so that was the first challenge, the writing, the narration, and kind of coming up with that. And the second challenge was actually using the software and recording the audio and kind of editing everything together and putting it on one track. And we actually at one point like edited a bunch of audio and made a lot of progress, and then our editing platform crashed and we ended up losing a lot of our audio. So instances like that, we were both new in kind of that regard, and so it was kind of a cool learning experience with the audio and learning how to edit everything together.
Yeah. So despite that challenge, it was an enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
Anything stick out in particular that you really enjoyed other than the learning process?
Yeah. One part for me, at least, that was really interesting was when we sort of went out into the public and interviewed just the people we saw. We kind of just went for it, and we had our questions and we had our topic in mind, and you know, it was really kind of moving almost to see just how much like people care. And yeah, we just chose like three or four random locals off the street, and they could have been anyone, they could have had whatever opinions they had, but it just so happened that they all were really just kind of, they had really great opinions about our topic, and they were really sort of insightful, and that was very helpful for our topic. And I thought it was just really cool that we could just like go out and make that happen, and also just putting ourselves out there was kind of a little bit scary at first, but it was fun.
And it's kind of intimidating, right?
Yeah. It was cool to kind of see, like, everyone in the valley, all these locals have their kind of this collective experience of the fire, but each person's experience is unique and each person has their own perspective. Like each person was in a different place and saw different things. And so it was unique to see all the similarities, but the differences too, right, in between everyone's perspectives.
Yeah. The perspectives you gathered were really heartfelt. I really appreciate that. Yeah. You guys provided so much information in just that short period of 19 minutes. So thank you so much. Is there anything else you guys want to add?
Yeah, we would just like to thank our teacher, Eric Skeef, for just being so helpful and really just sort of showing us the way and kind of helping us at every crossroads we had, especially when we face major challenges like the one that Cole talked about. Yeah. We would also like to thank our interviewees, Brian Davies, Kevin Warner, and Dave Kanzer, who was not actually featured in this podcast. We interviewed him in the beginning about the effects of drought, but he gave us a really great perspective and he was very helpful nonetheless, and we would like to thank him as well.
Perfect. Cole, anything?
Yeah, even though our podcast kind of evolved, it was really good initially to get like a wide variety of perspectives kind of over the issue from a bunch of different scientific and maybe like not social, but like Brian Davies, who's actually in the forefront of dealing with the wildfire and evacuating people. But it was a broad variety of perspectives that kind of gave us a really good view on the issue that we later used to build our podcast around.
Right. That's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
I really appreciate all of the perspectives that you provided. And I know that the KD&K listeners probably do too, because like you said, we were all kind of invested in that happening. So thanks so much for your hard work.
Yeah.
Thank you, and Riley and Cole. And now we are going to hear a podcast from Danny and Lauren about meaning in art. Thanks for tuning in to KD&K and the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program.